I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we'll talk about the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, both, of course, are campaigning for Hillary Clinton. Senator Warren, very visibly so. She's been appearing with Hillary Clinton quite frequently this week. And in a stirring speech, she took on Donald Trump. When it came time for Hillary Clinton to speak, Hillary Clinton said, "I don't know about you, but I could listen to Elizabeth Warren go on all day." As a writer in yesterday's New York Times suggested, she may have to. Progressive Democrats are already looking past Election Day and relying on Ms. Warren to become the thorn in chief in Mrs. Clinton's side, scrutinizing her appointments and agenda should she become president. Bernie Sanders recently wrote, "We need a Secretary of the Treasury who is prepared to take on the green and recklessness of Wall Street, not someone who comes from Wall Street. We need an Attorney General who will enforce anti-trust legislation." Should Hillary Clinton win, what advice will progressives give? There are suggestions that progressives are already giving a lot of advice as to cabinet selections and personnel suggestions. We have two guests with us this hour, and we'll be welcoming your phone calls as well. Charles Chamberlain joined Democracy for America a few years ago as political director. He's led campaigns for the public option and against telecom immunity for spying on Americans. He has, in 2012, became the executive director of Progressive Congress, the foundation for the Congressional Progressive Caucus. And he joined the Democracy for America as the executive director in August of 2013. Charles, we thank you very much for being with us. Hello.
Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, glad to be here.
Yeah, our pleasure. And Sarah Badawi is with us. Sarah leads the legislative outreach effort to build support for Progressive Change Campaign Committee policy initiatives. She helped lead the effort to build broad support for the idea of debt-free college, built support on the Hill, and that resulted in a joint resolution introduced in the U.S. House and Senate. And thank you very much, Sarah, for being with us. Hi.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Well, a lot of people are wondering, particularly people who are strong supporters of Bernie Sanders and those who really like Elizabeth Warren. I have read that there are already lists being circulated by people in progressive groups like both of yours to Hillary aides as to people they would like to see as Treasury Secretary, as Attorney General, and in the cabinet and certainly in the White House. Is that happening right now, Charles?
I think the answer to your question is a version of both yes and no. So as far as Democracy for America, what we've been involved in is making sure that the Clinton administration and the team that they're putting together for the transition understands that there are people that should not be in charge, as opposed to specifically telling them who should be appointed. It's more along the lines of, we cannot have people from the industry in which they are employed going into government office to then regulate that industry, especially when we know that over and over again, those people then eventually leave government, go right back to that industry. And the classic example here is Wall Street. There's a reason why Tammy Baldwin and Elizabeth Warren have a fantastic bill that they did in the last session that was all about ending the revolving door. And Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton both signed on and saying they supported that bill. So we're counting on a new Clinton administration to make sure that they're not doing things like putting the fox in charge of the hen house.
Yeah, and are you worried that they will?
Yes, of course. Definitely worried. Definitely think that this is a case where I want to trust them, but we got to verify. And the key to verifying is to make sure that we continue to keep the pressure up, that they know that we're paying attention, and that they know that there's going to be a response, both positive if they go the right way or negative if they go the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, are people at Progressive Change Campaign Committee coming up with lists for Hillary Clinton administration?
I think there are a lot of progressives in all corners trying to influence the outcome here. But I think the most important partner we're really looking to see if Hillary embraces is Elizabeth Warren. She's definitely done it on the campaign trail, but I think now is a key moment as she thinks about a potential administration. Whether or not she's looking to Elizabeth Warren as somebody she trusts in guiding her on these key appointments, because we've been saying all along, your personnel is your policy. And that's the one thing Secretary Clinton can control on day one after election. Elizabeth Warren has shown during this election that she is a very powerful ally to have on your side, but it's also well known that she's a powerful person to have against you. So from our perspective, all incentives point towards Secretary Clinton partnering with Elizabeth Warren in the future when deciding on those key appointments and setting new policy agenda so that everybody's fighting in the same direction.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that there are certain cabinet positions, a lot has been made of Treasury Secretary Bernie Sanders has also added the Attorney General because he's very concerned about antitrust legislation. Are those the two cabinet positions that are most important to have progressive voices, or are there others?
I mean, I would say that it's probably pretty important across the board. But one thing that we would, you know, evaluate any potential appointment on is whether they have a proven track record of challenging power, right? It's not necessarily an automatic disqualifier if you were from a particular industry, but what is your track record in that industry? Do you stand up when, you know, you need to and fight for the little guy? That's the one consistent thing that all of these appointments should really take into consideration.
Charles?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely critical. You know, I think that when we look at Hillary's, past, her record, she's always been or generally been very, very strong when it comes to social issues. She's been good at fighting back against Republicans in a number of critical areas. But the one big weakness that she's had for the progressive movement has always come down to economic populism. She's been a little too friendly to corporations, a little too friendly to Wall Street. And so these are the areas which is sort of the Achilles heel. These are the key areas that we're going to be paying the most attention to and making sure that she chooses the right people with a real recognition that, you know, when she chooses someone, their background is going to be absolutely critical, because if we don't know much about them, we can't assume they're going to be in the right position. And so I think when we look at all of her appointments, the most scrutiny is going to come with the economic ones. But of course, many of them are important and will matter. I just suspect that she's going to get the other ones right.
Mm-hmm. Tell us again about this. When Elizabeth Warren blocked the appointment last year, foiled President Obama's appointment of Antonio Weiss for a top Treasury Department position, she can do this like nobody else. What she did with the Wells Fargo CEO was just extraordinary and much watched by many people on YouTube. She just grills people relentlessly to the point where she's got all the facts and she winds up getting the action that she wants taken. Will she do that for possible appointees for Hillary Clinton, and refresh us about what she did concerning Antonio Weiss?
I think it's really important to recognize that while Elizabeth Warren was critical, was a very important role in making sure that we were able to defeat the appointment of Antonio Weiss, it wasn't just Elizabeth Warren. It was actually the fact that she was backed up by millions of grassroots progressives across the country that wanted to make sure that we didn't put the fox in charge of the hen house. And so, it was the work of groups like Progressive Change Campaign Committee and Democracy for America and Move On, backing up what Elizabeth Warren was saying. And now we go into this new election, once we have a President Clinton, hopefully, knock on wood, you know, God forbid that isn't what happens. Once we have a President Clinton, that we're going to see not just the great grassroots supporters of Elizabeth Warren getting behind stopping bad appointments, but we're also going to see the Bernie Sanders supporters across this country, which we now know, after he won 22 states in the primary and 43% of Democrats in the primary voting for him, we're talking about tens of millions of people that actually are backing Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and making sure that we choose the right people to move America forward.
Mm-hmm. Sarah.
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing Charlie touched on is this idea of the grassroots energy. And we know that Elizabeth Warren can generate that for pretty much any issue that she cares about. And I think the Democratic Party is better for it. But I think there's a bigger lesson here in both this election and going forward, and certainly for a future Clinton administration, is that when you go bold and you stand up to power and you challenge corporate actors, grassroots voters respond. And I think we're going to continue to see that trend within the party, because this entire election cycle has shown an undeniable shift in the party as a whole towards progressive ideals that are really embodied when Elizabeth Warren speaks up. But I think others are taking notice, and so are the grassroots, and that will just continue to become more and more the center of where we are as Democrats.
Yeah, right. So Kathleen, you were asking what kind of things we did. The grassroots made phone calls. I mean, hundreds and thousands of phone calls directly into members of Congress's offices to make sure that everyone knew where we stood. Hundreds of calls to the White House. petitions, literally over, I don't have the number directly in front of me, but I know that it was over 100,000 people signing on to petitions. It might have been even significantly higher than that. And then those were delivered in big ways to make sure that it couldn't be missed by the people in D.C. that are making these decisions. And that's not just the president, of course, but, of course, his entire team. And so I think what you can expect to see is that will happen again during a Clinton presidency, only it's quite possible it will even happen, you know, 5 or 10-fold instead of just, you know, instead of 100,000 names, it might be 1 million names. Because I do think that one of the things that has really come out of this election cycle, and especially with Hillary Clinton's embracing so much of what Bernie Sanders stood for, is there is a huge amount of energy to make sure that we're really taking on income inequality and doing whatever we can to beat that back. So I suspect that you're going to see the same kind of tactics we did before, only with even greater amounts of the grassroots being involved and having an impact.
She did embrace a lot of Bernie Sanders' agenda, but will she carry through on all of that or govern in a different way? Is there any way of knowing, Sarah?
You know, I think that's the big question that's on progressives' mind. But I think all signs point to her doing a really good job and putting in a good faith effort to really build a platform that speaks to this progressive moment. I think one of the best examples is the fact that she actually embraced debt-free college early in 2015, because she saw that that's where people were going. Long before I think it was even a real thing that the primary was superheated, she was embracing these things because she knows that those type of big progressive ideas like debt-free college, like expanding Social Security and Wall Street accountability are popular, not just popular, but overwhelmingly popular with a majority of Americans. She knows that in this election cycle, you cannot run the same kind of campaign you would have run in 2008 because the party and our voters have just moved on all of these important issues. And I think that we will see a good faith effort to make good on those promises. But the role of progressives is to make sure that that happens and hold the administration accountable.
We're again having health care front and center, and it's coming at a late time in this campaign, but we've struggled with this for a long, long time. We finally got Affordable Care Act. Now we're finding that health care costs are going to be going up significantly. The cost of health care is still huge in this country. Will both of your organizations be talking to whoever is in power? We assume that it's going to be Hillary Clinton. Maybe it isn't. To make certain that something is done about health care, and will you be putting or pushing for a single-payer option?
So most recently, the Progressive Change Campaign Committee partnered with a bunch of allies on the Hill and helped senators organize around introducing a resolution in support of a public option, specifically because of the issues we're seeing in the Obamacare marketplaces where private insurers are just refusing to play ball and essentially driving up the cost of the premium. So our position on this, and I assume many other progressives in the movement, is that more competition is better, and a public option is the first step in the right direction. That doesn't preclude single payer, but I think the most important thing right now is that we're seeing that Democrats are rallying around a public option as the floor of how we improve and build upon Obamacare.
Mm-hmm. And to be clear, the public option is a single payer option, and that's the idea. The idea is to bring in something like a buy-in to Medicare or something as similar to the access that veterans have at the Veterans Health Administration to make it so that these exchanges are fair, because it's not just about making sure that you have a competitor in there that is helping to bend the cost curve. But also one of the ways in which we can bend the cost curve is by having a competitor that can't break the law. The bottom line, government, they're not going to break the law. There may be times in which they're less efficient, but they don't go there and deny claims willfully at any point just because to. And the insurance industry has proven time and time again that they are filled with bad actors, that there is no insurance company. I think I can actually say this statement. There is not an insurance company that has not been fined for not doing the proper legal coverage they are required to do. Yet the government is required to do it. And so when we talk about bringing the public option back and making it possible for people to buy into this in the exchange, it's not just about bending the cost curve through having the big government buyer that can negotiate lower prices. It's also about bending the cost curve because you have a fair actor that will not break the law.
Well, let's welcome phone calls. We have a lot of questions and a specific request for those of you who were supporters of Bernie Sanders in the last election, in the primary season, certainly, where he ran a very, very strong campaign. Those of you who support Elizabeth Warren, those of you who support a progressive wing of the Democratic Party, what role, if any, do you see them playing right now to make certain, if there is a Hillary Clinton administration, that she is listening very carefully and following through on the suggestions of the progressive wing of the party? Are there certain kinds of issues that you think a Democratic administration needs to address? If you were a supporter of someone like Bernie Sanders, where are you now? Are you enthusiastically supporting, at least for the moment, Hillary Clinton's presidency? Maybe a few of you have gone to Donald Trump, but many have decided, like Sherrod Brown and others who are in that part of the party, to support Hillary Clinton. And really, Elizabeth Warren has been probably one of the most effective, second perhaps to Michelle Obama, people on the stump in terms of countering Donald Trump. We'd love to hear from you, okay? So call us. And you don't have to have been from that wing, but what do you think about this movement? And there was a lot said that this millennial generation in huge numbers is very progressive, and it will change the Democratic Party and may change some of the Republican Party as well. Well, all right, let's hear from you. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Love to get your messages there. And we're on Twitter @KDunnShow. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls for our guests. We have two of them. Sarah Badawi leads the Legislative Outreach with Progressive Change Campaign Committee, working with people in Congress to incorporate progressive ideas in their legislative priorities. She led the effort to build support for debt-free college. Also joining us is Charles Chamberlain. He is with Democracy for America, and he has led campaigns for the public option and against the telecom industry for spying on Americans. He became the executive director of Progressive Congress in 2012, and he rejoined the Democracy for America in 2013 and leads the strategic direction. All right, let's go to phone calls. We have many of them coming in, which is great. Tom in Iowa, our first caller. Hello, Tom.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have your guests won't like it, but I believe that Hillary will have to do something before she gets into further progressive liberal ideas. And I think that she's going to try to pull the country together first. And I believe that what she will have to do and will do is bring on some moderate Republican women in particular for cabinet positions and then move slowly towards some of the things that your guests want. I mean, I want them too, but she can't continue the war. I think she has to bring in and try to destroy, in a sense, some of the animosity. Kind of have a central party.
Mm. And do you have suggestions of people who might fit the bill?
Sure. The Secretary of Defense, the North Carolina Senator, Lindsey Graham.
Mm-hmm.
There's moderate Maine senators, and there's people, academics and so forth and so on, that... it won't scare everybody on the right so much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Tom. Interesting call. Charles, you want to start your response?
I think it's definitely accurate that Clinton will probably choose some interesting Republicans to join her cabinet in one form or another, or for some of her appointments. That certainly fits with the way in which Hillary Clinton is governed and the way in which she is sort of seeing the world. I would say that I do think that healing for this country has more about making sure that we move America forward, and we move it forward on the key issues that matter to the majority of Americans. And the reality is that this election is about the fight against income inequality. That's why you saw Donald Trump win on the Republican side, because he was anti-trade. And that's why you've seen Hillary Clinton adopt Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders' message, or rather adapt hers so that it matched them more clearly, is because these are the things people want. The majority of Americans, like Sarah said in the last section, want to see Social Security expanded. They don't want to see it cut. You know, they want to see debt-free college. They want to see raised minimum wage. They want to see things that are going to put real money back into the pockets of working Americans, and stop having an economy and a government that works purely for the 1%. So I think that she's going to choose some moderate Republicans, if there are any, to add to her cabinet. But I also think that if she does what she said, which I think that we're ready to see happen, that she's going to move forward with the very clear acknowledgement that this isn't a war that we're still fighting. It's a war that on November 8th we will have won, and she's going to lead forward as if that's what happened.
Oh, that's interesting. How about Republican women? Sarah.
Well, I certainly think that would be an olive branch and something that could be expected. But I think there's two separate questions between those appointments and how we hope to see Secretary Clinton lead as president. I mean, the overarching theme of this entire election has been populism and people feeling like government just simply isn't working for them, despite a lot of these issues that Charlie just mentioned on Social Security, debt-free college, Wall Street accountability, are popular with the majority of Americans. So we would really hope that a President Clinton would get to work on those in the early days of her administration and actually not waiting. The first 100 days or 200 days of this new administration will certainly set the tone for the level of boldness that we'll see over the next 4 years. And I think it really matters that the first fight be on something that truly inspires the public and sends a message to Republicans that have spent the past 8 years obstructing the Obama administration that the Democrats are serious about passing big, bold, progressive ideas that are actually popular with their disgruntled Republican base as well.
I want to, before we go back to phone calls, and we will momentarily, we heard so much during the campaign, and the success of Bernie Sanders in that campaign and the huge numbers of young people who were supporting Sanders. I mean, huge number. He had the young demographic by a mile. Nobody else could even reach him. What does that mean for the future, particularly of the Democratic Party? How quickly does it change? Does it become, just because of those massive numbers, much more progressive and pretty soon? Charles?
You know, as an organization, you know, Democracy for America, we early on endorsed Bernie Sanders for the presidency, and you know, we did a lot of work raising almost $2 million for him. I mean, our members participated in over 115,000 phone shifts, helping to call 75 million voters over the course of the primary. That's an outrageously large number of voter contact done by volunteers over the phone. Never happened before. And the reason why is because of this excitement and the support that he was able to raise across all demographics, but especially among millennials. And I think it's really clear that's the direction the party is going, and it's a good thing, because the party needs to catch up with where the rest of America is. The reality is the majority of Americans agree with millennials when it comes to the big issues of our time of fighting against income inequality and rebuilding an economy that works for everyone, not just for the top 1%, for holding Wall Street accountable. You know, you name it. All the issues that Bernie Sanders fought for are the same issues that the majority of Americans support. Poll after poll after poll shows it. You know, and when it wasn't Bernie Sanders, you know, it was Elizabeth Warren fighting for these things. And in fact, at Democracy for America, we tried to recruit Elizabeth Warren to run for president before we supported Bernie Sanders, you know, before that. And in doing that, we did polling on all these issues across the country. And what was remarkable was it wasn't just states like Vermont and Massachusetts that felt these ways. It was Texas. It was Kentucky. It was Iowa. It was red and purple states as well that fully support the agenda that Bernie Sanders fought for.
So Elizabeth Warren told you no, obviously.
Yeah, well, you know, Elizabeth Warren didn't feel this was her time, I guess. So we couldn't convince her to run. But you know what's interesting is that even though Elizabeth Warren didn't officially throw her hat in, there's no question that Elizabeth Warren's issues were exactly what we debated throughout the primary, and they're largely what we're debating now. The only times that we're not debating that now for this presidential race are when we're talking about what a disaster Trump is. But when it comes to ideas, the ideas are all coming from the progressive wing of the party. And that's why I'm positive the future of the Democratic Party is with that progressive wing, with these millennials. And I think we're going to see that move very quickly.
Let's go to Ashley in Coloma. Where are you from? Coloma, Ashley?
Yes, Coloma.
Hi, Ashley. Go ahead.
Yes, I originally had hoped that Rand Paul would make it as the Republican nominee. And when he didn't make it, I got behind Bernie Sanders and voted for him. And now that Bernie Sanders is not going to be the nominee, I'm one of those who can't vote for Hillary or Trump. And I have decided to go with Gary Johnson now. And I'm wondering what your guests think of other, what they think of, I guess, other Bernie or Die people, as they've been called, if that's something that they might be doing as well.
Sarah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sorry, I can certainly sympathize with that dilemma. But just, you know, as a progressive Democrat, I feel kind of heartened that the big story of this election and this cycle is how the progressive movement, through the participation of Senator Sanders and progressive groups like Democracy for America and so many of our other allies, has worked within the Democratic Party to shift the center of gravity around bold progressive ideas, so that there is something for everyone now. And I think it's really critical that we unite to defeat Donald Trump by supporting Clinton. But then after Election Day, the key is you, me, and grassroots people all across the country organizing to hold her accountable to that progressive platform that inspired so many when Bernie was in the primary.
Thanks so much, Ashley, for the call. George in Milwaukee, hello.
Yes, hi. A couple of suggestions. I'd like to see Hillary bring back Robert Reich as Secretary of Labor. I think that he would, I think he was kind of sidelined during the first Clinton administration, especially after Clinton lost to Congress in 94. And I think Reich would be a great advocate for higher minimum wage, et cetera. Secondly, I think the idea of bringing in some good, strong, moderate Republican women into the cabinet is a good idea. My suggestion for Secretary of Treasury is Sheila Bair, who had been the head of the FDIC, actually under George Bush, but is a person of tremendous integrity and is also a person who has recently really taken up the cause of lowering college costs.
Thank you, George. Charles.
I think those are some really interesting and great ideas. I definitely can hear that. The comments from the last caller was talking about wanting to vote for Gary Johnson and originally wanting Rand Paul to get in there. I think it's really interesting. She's a great example of the kind of voter that isn't looking at this election based on party affiliation. Obviously, Rand Paul is a Republican/libertarian. You've got Bernie Sanders, who's an independent/Democrat. You've got Gary Johnson, who's running as a libertarian. And I think that this is very typical, especially what we found among millennials around the country, is that it wasn't as important to them what party people were from, and what mattered was the issues. What mattered is what it was that was driving them to run for office and get done. And so I would guess that I didn't get a chance to speak with this caller, but I would guess that a large part of what she was talking about probably comes down to foreign policy. You know, Rand Paul is generally against, doing military action. Bernie Sanders is generally against it. Libertarians are usually much more isolationist. So it makes sense to be thinking that that makes sense. But what I would say is that when you look at this election, either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump is going to win. And if your issue is foreign policy or your issue is economics, Donald Trump, it will be a disaster for America on a level that we haven't seen before. Whereas, Hillary Clinton might be more of the same status quo in some respects that isn't great for a lot of progressives that want to see much more change at a much faster rate. The reality is that much more change at a much faster rate that would come from a candidate like Donald Trump is not the right kind of change. It's not the kind of change that's going to move America forward. And that's why the majority of Bernie Sanders supporters have gotten behind Hillary Clinton and are going to go and vote for her in November. I hope that at the end of the day that your caller decides to do that too, because the Johnson, while he may sound good in some of the theories and the issues that he talks about, he's not going to be president, and we need to make sure that we elect someone who actually is going to move the ball forward on the issues that matter to us.
Do you think Robert Reich should be brought back as Secretary of Labor?
Robert Reich is amazing. I love him. He's fantastic. He works with Democracy for America quite a bit, and in fact, we will have the day after the election. If you go to democracyforamerica.com right now, you can sign up to participate in a conference call with Robert Reich, where he'll talk about his views moving forward for the Clinton administration, about our fight against the Trans-Pacific Partnership that we expect in the lame duck. I think Robert Reich would be fantastic in just about any cabinet position. I don't know if he's on the fast track to make that happen, but yeah, that'd be great.
Mm. Thank you very much for the call. And let's go next to Dalton. Hi, Dalton.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
My question is, so assuming Hillary Clinton has to make a Supreme Court nomination, as you know, Congress hasn't gotten around to confirming Obama's appointee, you know, what role will progressive groups play influencing her Supreme Court nomination, or will she, you know, will she stick with Obama's appointee? Or, you know, because my biggest fear is, you know, given her kind of moderate reputation, I'm afraid that she might appoint someone to the Supreme Court who, you know, might be a little more socially and fiscally conservative.
Mm-hmm. Sarah?
You know, I think that's the million-dollar question. And, oh, yes? Hello? Hello?
I can still hear you.
Yeah, I hear you now. Go ahead.
Okay, great. Sure. So I think that's really the million-dollar question here, and it's unclear what she's going to do. But either way, I think progressive groups will be smart to continue organizing around the message of the Senate needs to do its job. But one thing we learned with Merrick Garland's appointment is energy was high up around the Supreme Court opportunity before the appointment or the nomination was made. And then once it was perceived that the appointment was free, you know, moderate in many respects, that energy kind of fell off. So if Hillary Clinton does decide to nominate someone else, she would be smart to nominate someone that is universally recognized as a progressive hero, at least in their legal record, and somebody who is balanced and, you know, will protect and uphold the Constitution. But I think the idea there is we will only see the same kind of grassroots energy if it is a bold, strong appointment in the same vein of an Elena Kagan or a Sonia Sotomayor.
Are you pushing for a certain Supreme Court nominee, Charles?
Well, you know, what we're pushing for is, oh, first of all, I want to say to the person's question there is that I don't think we can expect Hillary Clinton to nominate anybody more centrist than Obama nominated with Merrick Garland. I think that's about as far centrist as we can expect to come out of the Clinton administration as well. I don't think it'll be worse than that. And I especially think that if you look at what Hillary Clinton has campaigned on, she has campaigned on the idea that she does have a litmus test for the people that she's going to nominate for the Supreme Court. And that litmus test doesn't just include holding up the Constitution, which is the obvious one. But to define what that means, it also means that she wants to see Citizens United overturned. Now, that wasn't a litmus test for President Obama, and so it's fantastic to hear that Hillary Clinton believes that that is an issue important enough that she's going to make sure her nominees are in the right spot on. So now, for Democracy for America and for our grassroots members, what we really called on Barack Obama to do was to think big. Go big here. There's no reason to nominate just the same old white guy from corporate America that had been nominated before. And so we push for him to be nominating somebody that is progressive, a person of color, hopefully a woman, so that we can continue to build the life experience that it sits on the court. We need a court that reflects America's life experience. And right now, you know, it's been dominated since the beginning of our country with white males. And it's time that we make sure that we fill it out with the entire, you know, something reflective of all of America's life experience. Mm.
Well, the makeup of the Senate is going to be big in that regard, too, isn't it, as to whether or not nominations are totally blocked, if there will even be hearings. She's going to need a Democratic Senate.
That's right. That's why it's critical that we win the Democratic Senate. And, you know, in talking about a reflective Senate, we have a chance to elect not just the first black woman to Congress, since Carol Moseley Braun, so over 30 years ago, we have the chance to add many more people of color to the Senate than we've had in the past if we can win with Kamala Harris. And in California with Tammy Duckworth, in Illinois with Catherine Cortez Masato, in Nevada. So it's a very exciting election when it comes to building a more reflective government across the board.
Tina is next in Madison. Hello, Tina.
Hi, thanks for the show.
Sure.
I was one of the really big Bernie supporters here in Wisconsin. You know, a lot of us worked our hearts out, and I think the thing that concerns me, especially looking at the younger people like my sons and their friends who all worked so hard for Bernie, and they feel so kind of betrayed by the Democratic Party. So I guess one of my concerns is that Hillary will tack too much to the right, but I would also encourage all Bernie supporters not to be foolish and to get out there and vote for Hillary, because I think it's such a crucial election. And then I had one question. What do you think about immigration? Maybe you already talked about that and I haven't heard it, but that's kind of an issue, I think, of crucial importance. And how do you see that playing out?
Yeah, no, we haven't talked about it yet. Sarah?
Sure. So to your first point about being a Bernie supporter and where that leaves us now with Hillary Clinton and what she may do after Election Day, I think, you know, the most encouraging thing to me when I watched the final days of this election is that as Hillary Clinton is making her closing argument to swing voters and especially young people in states like Pennsylvania, it's really notable that she's turning to bold economic populists like Elizabeth Warren, like Senator Sanders, and not corporate-aligned Democrats. You know, it's clear that progressives like Warren have set the agenda on these popular ideas like debt-free college, expanding Social Security benefits, public health insurance, Wall Street accountability, all of these things. And Clinton has campaigned actively on these big things throughout her campaign. And I think that really bodes well for what we're going to see right out the gate after Election Day. But beyond that, I think, you know, for all of us, it's really about holding her accountable and making sure that she knows the grassroots are watching and will be responsive if she does try to take that tack to the right.
So in the meantime, she may be campaigning on those, but simultaneously we're having this drip of email leaks, and some of those are showing that she's pretty cozy with insurers and with pharmaceutical companies. We're showing that she's pretty cozy with Wall Street with many of her speeches. Does that fly in the face of what she's saying on the campaign trail? How do you reconcile both of those? Charles?
Well, I don't think any of those things are a surprise. I mean, all the stuff that's come out of the WikiLeaks, everything from, you know, the ways in which they colluded together to try to cut Bernie out, change primaries, change the debates. None of that's a surprise. It's just a confirmation of what we all already knew. And, you know, like the caller who called in, a Bernie supporter in Wisconsin, I'm glad to say, you know, Wisconsin went for Bernie by 58%, which is fantastic. You know, I'm pissed at the Democratic Party too, and I think you should be. I think that you should be upset, and it's going to be very important for the Democratic Party to do what it can to repair the damage it did with Bernie supporters throughout the course of the primary. Now, a great step on that was to fire Debbie Wasserman Schultz from her role and to put Donna Brazile in charge. Donna Brazile is a fantastic leader for the party. She understands how important it is to invest in the 50-state strategy all across this country and not just play in swing states. She also has immediately decoupled the DNC from the Clinton campaign in a number of different ways. To make it so that they could talk about races up and down the ballot very powerfully. So I think that the Democratic Party has a long way to go, but the very first step of firing Debbie Wasserman Schultz on the eve of the DNC was a critical first step that took it a mile down the road right off the bat.
Yeah, Sarah, what do you think?
Well, I think also one just final thought on that front. You know, like I said earlier, Elizabeth Warren is a really powerful ally to have on your side, but you also don't want to cross her. So I feel like that in and of itself, all that she has agreed to do and all the help that she's given to Secretary Clinton during this election cycle is not without notice, right? So I think it would be very foolhardy for the administration to campaign this way, have these powerful progressive surrogates, and then tack to the right, because they will rally all of their supporters to call out the administration on this inconsistency. So I think with those watchdogs in our corner, all signs point to a good faith effort to make good on these progressive campaign promises.
And Anthony from Appleton sends this email: as high as her disapproval ratings are, Hillary would be foolish not to heed the advice of those more popular than she. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter, at Kay Dunn Show. This hour, we're asking people from the progressive wing of the Democratic Party what they're thinking about Elizabeth Warren on the campaign trail and the influence that Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and others who are progressives might have on a Clinton administration should she become president, and the amount of influence they should have. More phone calls momentarily here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Stella in Door County, hello.
Hi. I have a question. Is there a possibility, if Hillary Clinton is elected and if she gets up to 3 appointments to the Supreme Court, in order to advance the equality of women and men in this country, would she be open to, is she even considering appointing only women and changing the majority of the court from male to female?
Do either of you know about that? I've heard a lot of talk about having half her cabinet appointments be female and personnel in the White House. Has anybody heard anything about the Supreme Court?
Well, she certainly hasn't made a public statement like that. When she's talked about her litmus test for the Supreme Court, she hasn't talked about gender being one of them. But she has certainly made a number of commitments about making sure that gender equality and equity within her administration is strong. And I think if you look at her campaign and the positions of power that she's created in her campaign for women, I think that we can expect that I'll bet this is something that's on her mind, that her mind of trying to make it so that we have a court that is finally dominated by women for once rather than continuing 2 centuries of male domination. I think that's a very, very likely legacy that she's going to want to leave for herself. But I definitely would say she hasn't stated that out loud.
Mm-hmm. Our number is 800-486-8655, and our next caller is from Wausau, Skyler from Wausau. Hi, Skyler.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a quick comment about a previous statement. I don't believe that we need to come together to defeat Donald Trump because he will defeat himself. What we need to do is come together to defeat the system, because that's what's put us in this position of choosing between two evils. Now, I was a huge Bernie supporter, and I don't know a single person who is going to vote for Hillary Clinton. I know a ton of Trump supporters, and I've tried to talk sense into them, but I don't know anybody who's going to vote for her, because we were so betrayed by the Democratic Party that I'll never vote for the Democratic Party again. And now I consider myself an undecided voter, deciding between Gary Johnson and Jill Stein, because they are the only two decent choices left. What would your commenters have to say about that?
I'm sure something, Charles.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I definitely understand where he's coming from with his frustrations, and I be pissed with the Democratic Party too as a Bernie supporter. What we saw happen was ridiculous, and a classic example of where your caller's on the mark, that we need to change the system, and we need to make it clear to the establishment that they're blowing it. And I think that we've done that in a lot of different ways. The reality is that by electing Donald Trump, we don't make that happen. So when your caller says we don't need to come together to defeat Donald Trump, I just think that's not realistic. The reality is that when you look at polling, if you look at what happened, for example, in Britain, Brexit was going to lose because it was extremely unpopular. And so what happened is the people that believed it was going to lose didn't bother showing up at the polls. And what did happen is the people that wanted Brexit did. They showed up and they won. That's exactly what we could see happen in November here for Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton could be ahead by double digits, and we could still lose by double digits because people like your caller and to some extent myself, who are not super excited about Hillary Clinton, decide to stay home because we think she's got it locked up. My answer to that is don't do that. We have to get out there. We have to vote for Clinton, even if it means you're holding your nose, because it's critical that we defeat Donald Trump. It is not the future that any of us want. Any of those of us that supported the ideals of Bernie Sanders through the primary, Donald Trump will do the opposite on every single one of them. So while Clinton may be wrong on several of them, may be wrong on many of them, she is not wrong on all of them. And what we will be doing is we'll fight her when she's wrong and we'll support her when she's right. Mm. I don't want to just fight Donald Trump nonstop for the next 4 years.
Sarah, do we have a good idea of where the Bernie Sanders supporters are going in this election? Has anybody done accurate, thorough reporting on that, analysis of it?
You know, I'm sure it's out there, but I think the general trend is we've actually seen voters come over to Hillary Clinton as she continues to really turn up the volume on her progressive agenda. I mean, we saw right after the primary that she was a little bit slow to really jump in on her progressive platform and elevate that. But like I said, in the final days of her campaign, she's really leaning on those inspiring progressive surrogates like Senator Warren, like Senator Sanders, and even, you know, Michelle Obama and President Obama himself to bring out those young swing voters to this election. And I think she's doing all the right things to get them there. But like Charlie said, he said it perfectly. We don't want to wake up on the day after Election Day with a Brexit situation because people believed in a false choice here. Like, there really is only one way to stop Donald Trump, and that's for everybody, no matter who you supported in the primary, to turn out and vote for Hillary Clinton.
Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. How large is the progressive wing of the Democratic Party? When we're talking about Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Sherrod Brown, are there a lot of members, or are they just so much in the national consciousness and so important and good at what they do that those are the only ones that we need to think about? Are there a lot of progressive people, Charles?
Well, you know, when you think about it, the fact that Bernie Sanders got over 13 million votes, he won 23 states, over 43% of the Democratic Party voted for him, that seems to me like it's a pretty significant wing of the party. In fact, I would guess that it's probably the strongest wing because of the 57% that's left, is that all unified behind centrist Democrats or all unified behind conservative Democrats? I don't think so. So I think that that's one of the reasons why when we're talking about the future of the party and we're looking at millennials and pointing and saying, look, they're the future, it's not just about them. It's about the overall party. The majority of the party, the strongest wing, is the progressive wing. And I think as we move ahead, we're going to see us continue to, begin to start dominating some of the biggest decisions at a level that has never happened before.
Yeah, and yet, Sarah, we just heard from somebody who was a Sanders supporter who said that a lot of his friends he knows who used to be the same are voting for Donald Trump. They're not members of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, are they?
Well, I don't... Go ahead, Charlie.
I just want to say that, you know, we went all in for Bernie Sanders during the campaign. We have over a million members nationwide, and we've polled our members as to who they're going to vote for. And we've seen the amount of support that Donald Trump has among our membership is less than 1%. Everybody else is planning on voting for Hillary Clinton with a percentage that are talking about voting for Jill Stein possibly. And it's interesting to see how the Jill Stein support has gone down immediately after the primary.
Yes.
It was very high. 28% of our membership was saying they might consider voting for Jill Stein. That number now is below 5%. So you can see that as time has gone by, people have realized what's at stake and they're getting behind the right people. And I just want to say that's the polling of our own organization. If you actually look at the public polling that's out there, you'll see that there are more Bernie Sanders supporters supporting Hillary Clinton than there were Hillary Clinton supporters supporting Barack Obama in 2008. So I think that really we have a party that is surprisingly unified, much stronger together in trying to defeat Donald Trump. And then, unfortunately, your caller and his friends are sort of outliers in that regard.
Jerry in Las Vegas. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Excuse me?
I said,
hello?
Good. How are you? Go ahead, Jerry.
Okay. Now, I got to go back to immigration because I wasn't quite clear on the answer to give it. I'm what you call a black independent voter. Now, I was in the first debate, I was there listening at him. And the thing that struck me hard, because at that time I was undecided, but the thing that struck me the most hard is when Donald Trump turned to Hillary and said, hey, you are a globalist. So at that point, I stopped looking at Hillary as a woman. I stopped looking at Donald Trump as a man. And I wrote down nationalist, globalist. And from my point of view, a globalist like a country without borders. And when you got a country without borders, you know, you got no country.
I need to hold you there. I'm sorry, Jerry, but we're pressed on time. We have about 30 seconds. Sarah, this one's yours.
Sure. So I would say that, you know, Senator Warren put it best yesterday. We're definitely not going to build a stupid wall to prove our borders. But, you know, to the extent that we can support dreamers and figure out the best ways to accomplish comprehensive immigration reform that not only creates, you know, more legal pathways for people to become citizens, but also makes it feasible and makes it able for them to become a part of the fabric of American society is what this country is built on. Whereas, you know, on the other side of this, Donald Trump makes a lot of noise about borders, but, you know, keeping people out is not really the answer, and certainly building a wall to do it is not it either.
Thank you both so much for being with us. We're plumb out of time. Thank you, Charles. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
Charles Chamberlain, who is with Democracy for America as political director. And we also thank Sarah Badawi, who is leading the legislative outreach with Progressive Change Campaign Committee. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this hour and to Zeb Gozman for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. Milwaukee Police Chief Ed Flynn is with us hour one. Hour two, a guy who wrote a book on his first 60 years. He's a good writer, too.